Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity.
And greetings, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. And, I'm hearing myself in the phone here, Lauren. That's not working. Anyway, we've got a wild and interesting show for us today. We're starting out with Rich Galen. He's a senior advisor to the Fred Thompson campaign. His website is Mullings.com, M-U-L-L-I-N-G-S.com, and the senior advisor to the Fred Thompson campaign. Rich, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. Nice to be with you.
Great to have you. The FEC, the Federal Elections Commission, has had a complaint filed against Fred Thompson. I'm curious, what's the deal with this complaint that he's violated the testing the waters exemption of the election law? He's been presenting himself as a candidate for president. He's been raising large sums of money beyond, you know, typically what would be required to explore a possible candidacy. And he's even signed a long-term lease on a headquarters for his campaign, spending advertising dollars. Isn't this all against the law?
No.
No.
Why not? Great intro, but no is the answer to that. Our legal counsel, our general counsel, is the immediate past chairman of the FEC, a guy named Michael Toner, and we do what he tells us to do, and we follow his laws. And some a guy that writes for the what was it called, the leftwingblog.com or something, whatever it is. I mean, that's okay. I mean, anybody can do that. But, you know, we'll respond to it if and when the FEC tells us we have to respond, not when, you know, somebody that just got their law degree or got his law degree 20 years ago tells us we have to respond.
Right. So you think that the FEC is going to go along with your position on this?
I am absolutely confident.
Yeah. Where in the world is Fred Thompson? Why hasn't he announced?
I'm sorry, by the time we get to that, by the time the FEC gets to it, Thompson will have made a decision whether to get in or out anyway. So the whole thing will be moved. So it doesn't, well, it just doesn't make any sense to engage in it.
Yeah, it might even be after the next election.
Yeah, that's right. As he's being sworn in, he's going to announce.
So why hasn't he announced yet?
Well, you know, there's a lot of reasons that go into it. I don't know if you know, there's a woman named Janet Hook, a great writer for the LA Times, and she called the other day and said, you know, isn't this really too late? Isn't this really too late? I said, let's reverse it. What if you went to, let's say John McCain and say, hey, what would you have done? If you could rewind the clock, would you have preferred to have waited 7 months or so? And I guarantee you the answer would be yes. So, you know, we're all going to be smarter on February 6th as to whether this is too late, too early, not enough time. But, you know, that's the nature of the beast. Even when we understood the calendar 4 years ago, nobody actually understood who was going to be the nominee. So, you know, let's see what happens.
Yeah, okay. And is Fred Thompson really going to run as a good old boy with a red pickup truck when actually for most of his career he was a Gucci shoe-wearing lobbyist in Washington, D.C.?
I don't think he owns Gucci shoes. I actually checked that.
Well, you get my point, though. I mean, this is a guy who made big bucks for a long time as a lobbyist for some of the largest companies in America, and I don't hear any reference to that anywhere.
Well, no. I think it's on the record. I mean, one of the good things about having a long history in and out of politics and in and out of Washington is that your record is very public and everybody can read it and make up their own rules. Look, are we going to get 100% of the vote? No, you need one more vote than the other guy got.
Yeah. Well, I guess the larger question is, why can't a Republican just be who he is? Why can't he just say, hey, you know, I'm here for the big guys. I work for the big companies. I'm gung-ho for the big corporations. I was a big lobbyist for them. Why do they have to manufacture this red pickup truck, good old boy story?
I absolutely agree with you, Tom, and that's why I wonder why that Republican, John Edwards, is taking the I'm for the little guy tack.
I'm sorry?
That's why
John Edwards has always been for the little guy. I mean, he made a career as a trial lawyer defending the little guy.
Yeah, living in $14 billion houses and pretending that he's a man of the people. I mean, that's just, you know, that's the nature of American politics today.
But Fred Thompson was out there working for the big guys. John Edwards was working for the little guys. Come on, you can't draw a comparison between the two.
Taking money that should have gone. No, we're not getting into this. This is a silly conversation.
Well, no, I mean, that's my point. You know, John Kennedy, you could argue, well, John Kennedy was, you know, he had a lot of money in his family, et cetera. Franklin Roosevelt did. But they weren't out there working in the interests of the big tobacco companies and the other big companies like Fred Thompson has.
Are you done?
Rich? Yeah.
I can't seem to get a conversation going because you keep going. So I'm just trying to get into the rhythm here. The answer is that American politics in the first part of the 21st century is show business. And show business is what every candidate does, whether it's Hillary Clinton, whether it's John Edwards, whether it's Barack Obama or Fred Thompson or anybody else. There is a public persona that they adopt and adapt, and it is that persona which most people get, think that they're voting for. Look, is Fred Thompson Arthur Branch? No, he's Fred Thompson. But a lot of people see him and say, oh, it's Arthur Branch. Well, we don't play on that. Does everybody understand that? I mean, does everybody believe that Hillary Clinton is all sweetness and light and smiles? No, we know better than that, but that's not what the campaign's about. I mean, everybody has, it's called a shared myth. Everybody in America, when they deal with politics, there's a shared myth with what they understand the underlying actions may be and what they understand that the bigger principles may be. And whether it's Mrs. Clinton or Mr. Thompson, whoever it is, everybody operates on these two levels, and that's the game is played.
Yeah, we're talking with Rich Galen.
People are very sophisticated. They get this.
We're talking with Rich Galen, Mullings.com, his personal blog. He's a senior advisor to the Fred Thompson campaign. Rich, let's talk about some of the issues. What, in your mind, or in Fred Thompson's mind, are going to be the big issues that he's going to push as a presidential candidate?
Well, he's talked about this a lot, both way before ever thinking about running for president after. But he is a lot of what he comes to, almost everything that he comes to from being on the side of being a Federalist. You know this, but some of your readers may have forgotten since high school and left, and they read the actual Bill of Rights, that the Tenth Amendment, and I don't have it in front of me, but it effectively says that any rights not specifically given to the federal government are reserved to the states and to the people, or to the people in the states, one or the other. And that has, I've said for years that if the press corps, the American press corps, was as interested in protecting the First Amendment and getting rid of the Second as they are, ignoring the Tenth, this would be a far different country. And I think that's where he comes from. He wants government, generally speaking, and there are obvious places where the federal government has to have control, but for the most part, to have, state and local governments have control over the lives of their people, because that's where people have, have the greatest say. I mean, you have more say. I don't know where you live, but let's say you live in Marietta, Ohio, small town in southeastern Ohio. You have a great deal more control over your city council because you see them every day than you do over your state legislator or over your congressman or your senator or certainly the president. And so that's what, the framers had in mind, I think, when they put that in there as the 10th Amendment. And a lot of the stance he takes flows from that.
Rich, I read on your blog that you caught Newt Gingrich preparing 2008 campaign ads. Is Newt going to run for president? And if so, how's that going to change the equation on the Republican side?
No, actually, what he was doing, he was taping a DVD to accompany his book about religion in Washington. And he and his wife were there, and they had a film crew, and, of course, people sort of gathered. And his press guy, a really good guy named Rick Tyler, called me and said people were standing around and said, oh, he must be filming campaign commercials, but it wasn't. It was a DVD for his book. Getting back to the central question, though, I doubt that Newt will run for president. I think Newt is in the best possible position, and if he can keep this going for another 6 or 8 weeks, I think he will have been very successful because, as a potential candidate, somebody like Newt will get on Meet the Press. He'll get on, whatever. And get to talk about the issues. The second he announces as a candidate, all those, whatever they were, 418, whatever the number of ethics complaints that came down, pardon me, that were filed against him, about one or two, I think, had any merit whatsoever. But every one of those will be brought back out again, and legitimately so. And by the time the campaign finishes explaining why that one was thrown out and why that didn't have any merit, it'll be next March. So I don't think that he's going to run.
Yeah, and to a certain extent, he's got the benefit, since he's not running, or he's not saying he's running, of just, generally raising his profile, which makes him more marketable as a consultant down the road and increases, or as a lobbyist or anything else. There are some who are speculating.
Your point's a good one, but I don't think he's doing it as a cynical thing. I think he's doing it because he really does want to help.
And you don't think Fred Thompson is either?
He's not what?
Fred Thompson isn't just milking this. He's seriously going to run.
We'll know in a couple of weeks, probably.
Okay. All righty. Rich Galen, Mullings.com, his website.
Thank you.
Rich, thanks for being with us. 16 minutes past the hour.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
A voice. I thought it was God. It said,
"You're lost, man, and your system is flawed."
It was so scary. I was so terrified. That morning, I decided it was time to change sides. I'm a Republican now. Party elect. I'm a Republican now. I got red on my neck. I'm a Republican now.
We ain't having no sex.
I'm holier than thou. I'm a Republican now.
Oh, what a fine thing it is. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, there's some strange stuff out there in the news. In fact, sometimes some of it even seems a little crazy, you know. Yeah, this Sandra Cobran over at the Women's E! News posting an alternate. This is actually, you know, our crazy alert is sometimes for the really strange things. This is really strange, but it's also really serious. Michael Vick is in big trouble because dogfighting, you know, beating up dogs, you know, trashing dogs, killing dogs. Well, obviously also for the gambling part of it. But, you know, the thing that is really horrifying Americans is these poor dogs getting beat up and trashed. And her article, beat a woman, play on. Beat a dog, you're gone. And she notes, scores of NFL players as well as players of the National Basketball Association and Major League Baseball have been convicted of domestic abuse, beating women. Yet they play on with no fear of losing their careers. Most pay small fines, and if that, and are soon back on the field immediately. The message is clear. Beat a woman, play on. Beat a dog, you're gone. A 3-year study published in 1995, researchers at Northwestern University found that while male student athletes are 3% of the population, they represent 19% of sexual assault perpetrators and 35% of domestic violence perpetrators. But no one has been suspended, right, Sandra Cobran. No one has been suspended in the NFL for spouse abuse or domestic violence, even though they've been arrested and convicted. The NFL Players Association, Mr. Upshaw, says in a statement, "We believe the criminal conduct to which Mr. Vick has pled guilty today cannot be condoned under any circumstances." Well, we all agree with him. But what about beating up women? Last summer, Philadelphia Phillies pitcher Brett Myers assaulted his wife on a public Boston street. He was charged with assault and battery. Major League Baseball, nothing. They said it's an off-field incident. It doesn't, you know, this doesn't involve us. This didn't happen on the field. Well, neither did Michael Vick's dogfighting. Jason Kidd of the National Basketball Association, the New Jersey Nets, he pleaded guilty to spousal abuse. Was he punished by the NBA? No. Sacramento Kings' Ron Artest, suspended last season for 72 games for fighting in the stands. In March, he was arrested for domestic violence. He got a $600 fine and a 2-game suspension for a guy who makes millions of dollars a year. $600 fine. He pled no contest to the domestic violence charge and was sentenced to 100 hours of community service, 10-day work project, mandated extensive counseling. The NBA did nothing there, too. I don't know. Maybe if he beat up a dog, he would have been benched for the season. So it's downright bizarre, the hypocrisy out there. And we have a pigeon alert. A pigeon alert. I'm telling you, my theory is that pigeons are actually spies from the planet Xenu. Because wherever you see leaders of, you know, meetings of world leaders, there's the pigeons, and they're spying on them. And every 6 months, the mothership comes down and drops off another load of them and takes up the last bunch and unwinds the tape recorders, you know, or they're probably digital these days, right? And the way I know this is true, you never see a dead pigeon, you never see a baby pigeon, so they must be robots. But they do, if they are robotic, maybe in order to make them seem like they're actually living animals, they have them produce an enormous amount of pigeon dung. And now this, again, a curious story. The bridge over the Mississippi River in Minneapolis, one of the many things that was harming its infrastructure. Well, this is from a 1987 report. Quote, there is a coating of pigeon dung on steel with nest and heavy buildup on the inside below, inside hollow box sections. So in 1996, screens were installed over openings in the bridge's beams to keep the pigeons from nesting there. Pigeon droppings contain ammonia and acids, said chemist Neil, Langerman, an officer with the Health and Safety Division of the American Chemical Society. This is from an article by Martiga Lone in the AP. If the dung isn't washed away, it dries out and turns into a concentrated salt. When water gets in, combines with the salt and ammonia, creates electrochemical reactions that rust the steel underneath. Well, wait a minute. They put in these cages to keep the pigeons out, and somehow they got... Well, see, again, they're robots with superhuman powers. It's interesting. Interesting. The stuff that's out there in the news that we need to know about. On Thursday, the administration is planning to make public parts of a new national intelligence assessment, by the way. This is from the Center for American Progress's blog, Think Progress. That expresses deep doubts that the Maliki government can overcome sectarian differences. Frankly, there are a lot of us who are speculating, and in this right up actually at the top of the Think Progress blog, right-wing operatives plot to overthrow Maliki, and replace him with reliable collaborator Alawi. And this Republican lobbying group, Barbara Griffin and Roberts, Griffith and Rogers, is working on this campaign here, 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Yeah, there's really nothing to fear. I mean, you'd be concerned about things, but, you know, terrorism, I mean, more people die from drunk drivers than terrorism in the United States. For that matter, probably more people die from drunk drivers in Israel than from terrorism. I don't know the exact numbers, but and it's a real problem there. I mean, we have to put things in proportion and in context. It's, you know, how many people die from cancer? If you want to make a list of things that you can be horrified about, it could be a fairly long list, but pretty much we've all figured out, hey, you go on with your life. And America needs to get on with its life. And we need to, and we need to return to our core values, frankly. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Gunner in Long Beach, California. Hey, Gunner, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. You are a true hero.
Well,
I have 2 points, if I may. First, you had the campaign manager for Fred Thompson on, and he complained about not getting enough airtime. And when you let him talk, you asked him, what are the essential issues of the campaign? And he said, some city council, we have a $3 trillion federal budget, and some city council in Ohio should be running people's. That was a joke.
I have a feeling that these guys, and I, you know, again, Rich isn't here to defend himself, so I'm not going to pick on him, but I have a feeling that it's got to be a very difficult thing to be a spokesperson for a campaign that's not a campaign for a candidate who's not a candidate,
yeah.
Particularly when there's federal laws around that stuff.
Okay, if I may, my more important point on the Iraq
sure.
war, I'm tired of hearing the Democrats complain that they can't do anything because they only have 50 votes in the Senate when the Republicans do whatever they want with 40 votes.
Right.
I should call when you have Bernie on tomorrow, but why are the Democrats filibuster any bill that doesn't have withdrawal in the title when it comes to Iraq?
And well, that, it's... Yeah, it's certainly what I've been suggesting all along. It's what John Edwards was suggesting, you know, just, you know, either keep sending the bill that has withdrawal in it back over and over and over again and let Bush veto it 3, 4, 5, 6 more times. And by the way, Charlie, you're not getting any more money out of us, or don't send any authorizations at all. Yeah, no, absolutely, Gunner. You're spot on. And again, we're only going to see members of Congress do this if they get it that we're there supporting them if they do that. And that's why supportive phone calls, not angry phone calls, and supportive information, I think, is really important. Frank in Middletown, New York. Hey, Frank.
Hi there. How are you? First of all, I want you to know I just love your show, and I listen to it constantly. You know, I think the reason why right-wing talk radio doesn't work the way, liberal talk radio does, and you're the absolute proponent of this. You're so good at having people on. Right wing doesn't want to hear any opposing viewpoints. You get people on who are intelligent and have opposing viewpoints, and then you sit back and very respectfully let them dig themselves into this hole of absolute illogic where two things really come up. The first is a total lack of empathy for those less fortunate than themselves. And the second, an amazing disdain for the intelligence of the American people. And you're very good at standing back and letting them do that for you.
Well, I think, you know, Rich made the point that he thinks that people are actually quite sophisticated and they'll make wise decisions. I think that's true. I'm not sure, and again, I'm not speaking about or for Rich. As I said, he's not here to defend himself. But I think, by and large, that that's not a consensus that is shared by the Rovians and the folks in the White House. I really think that they think that the American people are out there to be manipulated. And certainly, if you look at the stats of people who are regular watchers of Fox News, you know, Roger Ailes and the Fox News bunch don't think that of the American people, because the majority of people who watch Fox News think that somehow, as Bush suggested yesterday in his speech, that somehow Iraq and Saddam Hussein was behind 9/11. You know, he said, we're not going to stop this war against those people who struck us on 9/11. Say, what? Number one. And number two, you know, there about a third of Fox News listeners or viewers believe that weapons of mass destruction have been found in Iraq. I mean, it's just bizarre. It's absolutely bizarre, and this, of course, is the result of a well-orchestrated, well-funded, long-term, long-running campaign of a misinformation campaign. It's the big lie. It's Goebbels' big lie, and they're pushing it, and to a certain extent, it's working. Burns in Alabama. Hey, Burns, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Your show is most educational, and we need educating down here in Alabama, let me tell you. But I just
Well, we do all over the country, Burns.
I understand that. Anyway, I keep hearing everybody talk about how rich John Edwards is, and it gets tiresome. I got a Time magazine from July 19, 2004. According to this article, both his parents were mill workers. They had to take out a $50 loan to pay the hospital bill for his birth.
That's right.
Now, his mother sewed kids swimsuits for a living. His father was a $35 a week textile worker. And he's just the American dream, you know. I don't know why he doesn't, perhaps his campaign doesn't emphasize, you know, where he comes from.
He does, and he does that in all of his campaign stops. It's just, again, the corporate media in the United States. Edwards is the candidate that the Republican Party and the corporate media in the United States, and all the, by and large, all the big corporations, the conference board, the CEOs of the 100 largest corporations, he's the candidate they are the most afraid of, because he has spent his life taking these people on and kicking their butts.
Right.
And that's why you are not hearing that much about Edwards in the media, even though he's, you know, in many cases way out ahead of all the other candidates in many states. And the guy, you know, successfully ran, in my opinion, I continue to think that Ohio was stolen, successfully ran as vice president of the United States and did a great job. And when he was running for president last time around there, he had a very, very close shot with John Kerry. I really believe that Edwards is the guy that they are the most afraid of, and that's why they're so aggressively pushing the candidates that they think that they can beat that being Obama and Hillary, more easily than they could beat Edwards. And I've had people say to me, oh, is that because we're talking about a woman and an African-American? And no, it's because of his positions on the issues. Edwards is the most progressive of all of them. Edwards is the guy who has been taking on corporations his entire life. And like I said, I think he's the guy. And you look at the polls. He's the guy who can most easily beat any Republican. And that's why they're going to try and take him down. It's just like Nixon did. I mean, the Republican strategy, Republican 101, is pick the person you're going to run against. Don't wait until the time of the election to figure out what your strategy is going to be. Do it in advance. Mess with the other people's primary. This was what Richard Nixon did when he figured out that, you know, his campaign managers figured out that there was no way that he could beat Ed Muskie in the election of, as I recall, 72. And so they went out and they sabotaged Muskie so that he could run against McGovern, because the polling told him that he could beat McGovern, but he couldn't beat Muskie. And that's what, in my opinion, the Republicans are doing right now all over again. So, anyhow, Larry in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Larry, welcome to the program.
This is Maurice.
I beg your pardon?
Hello?
Larry, you're on the air.
This is Maurice, actually.
Oh, Maurice, I'm sorry.
Yeah, hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm fine, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, listen, I want to talk quickly about the Mike Vick controversy, and I got a lot of things to say, so I'm going to try my best to make it very quick.
Sure.
First and foremost, USA Today ran an article last year. They had the previous year's convicted players in any state or federal situation. There were 41 players. 39 of them were black. That constitutes only 2% of the players in the NFL. The thing about the civil rights movement, I think, that ultimately the best thing that came out of it was that it just made racism, overt racism, non-PC. I think we live in as much of a racist environment as we ever did. It's just that it's not politically correct to just come out and call people names. Now,
so you're suggesting that Michael Vick was arrested or convicted because of racism, or are you suggesting it got all the press coverage because of racism?
I think this thing is getting as much press coverage as it is because he's a young black male with cornrows, and he shows us overt hip-hop lifestyle. You know,
yeah.
And that in and of itself is anathema to not only white America. And I'm not saying that white America is responsible for all the racism in this country, because me being a black male, I can honestly say that I harbor some prejudicial feelings towards white people. You know,
it's part of the human condition, Maurice. I mean, the honorable thing is to acknowledge it and you know, try to purge yourself of it. But I think that there's this natural human instinct to, in all regards, I mean, people who speak different languages, whatever, to say, hey, that person is somehow different than me. And we have to figure out how to bridge that. But yeah, I'm not sure, though, you know, respectfully, I'm not sure that racism is what's driving the Michael Vick press. I think that anytime you've got a story that involves animals, oddly enough, and this was, this is where it horrifies me, that so many people in sports beat up their wives, beat up women, in some cases in public. I mean, one guy on the field beat up his wife, and that doesn't get the press. But you beat up an animal, or you're involved in killing animals, it gets a lot of press. Well, you know, Americans love their animals.
Sure.
But, you know, hey, what about domestic violence? It's almost that's the topic, you know, like racism, like you said. It's one of the topics that isn't discussed in a really honest way, frankly, in this society.
I don't disagree with you. And I guess you sort of prove my point in that, because this was a situation where he will admit to conspiracy to dogfight and gamble possibly and to kill dogs in and of itself compared to other situations. I'm reading a message board right now by a Rupert Murdoch-led organization. These people don't even want him to have a second chance.
Yeah, I know.
Some of them want him to be tortured and killed and all these kind of things.
Oh, I know. That's the thing. I mean, you go after animals, and there, some people get very upset, and I think with some justification. But let's also be concerned about people who go after human beings. Maurice, thanks for the call and for listening to the program. Well said. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Will our pivotal generation create a sustainable world in time?
People need to realize there are things they can do in their everyday lives. Everybody making a change adds up to something meaningful. Our project today is the welfare of all of life as a practical objective.
With existing technologies, we could literally reduce the human footprint on planet Earth by 90%.
We have to imagine what it would be like to redesign design itself.
These are not technical issues nearly as much as they are leadership issues. There was a time when Republicans and Democrats joined to pass major environmental laws. 500 years out, people look back at this time that this was our finest hour.
What a great time to be born. What a great time to be alive, because this generation gets to completely change this world.
That a clip from Leonardo DiCaprio's new movie, The 11th Hour, where I will be for the opening in San Francisco tomorrow. I'll be flying up there, or down there, I guess. Here I am in Portland now this afternoon, and tomorrow we'll be in San Francisco, and tomorrow night at the Landmark Embarcadero. And we're still trying to figure out which showing it is that I'll be there afterwards. Hopefully we'll find out during the show here today, and I can let you know. Anyhow. 1-866-303-2270, airamerica.com if you want to participate in our blog, tomhartman.com. Also, we have the live chat room up and running, and I'm in there hanging out, and all kinds of interesting folks out there. Heidi in Columbia, South Carolina. Hey, Heidi, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I'm a listener, avid listener of your show. I love you. We used to live in Washington State, and now we're in Columbia, South Carolina, and it's a real difference, but I'm an Army wife, and I'm also a Army brat. My father died in active duty, and my husband's facing deployment. He's an Army physician here at Fort Jackson. And last night, you know, my husband and I go back and forth about me being very outspoken, but we're both liberal. We come from Massachusetts and Portland, Maine, and we're very liberal. And we have a lot of liberal Army friends, and since this war, that has grown. And
sure.
What has happened is that President Bush has alienated his army and his military. And I was watching, I hate to admit, but I turned on Hardball last night.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Barnicle, who I love, is from Boston. And
yeah.
He was hosting it. And he had Ari Fleischer on, the former...
Right. Former White House spokesflack who
yes.
has a new campaign out
called
to this.
Yeah, and he played yeah. an ad that he's selected 20 states that are right. on the fence about the war, and he's right. left the others that are totally against the war, you know, out of it. And he picked this ad that they showed was a Army soldier who was a double amputee, and he was speaking about staying in the war. And as he was speaking about his service, they showed the airplanes going into the towers.
Yeah.
And I lost it. I mean, I cannot believe, like, the whole day I've been in this state where, you know, I go back and forth between feeling like I can't do anything and feeling like I just want to, like, especially where I live, go down the street
yeah.
and just be like, because this happens to be one of those states where they're
yeah.
choosing to campaign this trash, and they have lots of money behind them, and it,
well,
and it's just like what the president said when he was comparing Vietnam to this, and that the fact that the terrorists are coming after us because of our withdrawal from Vietnam, like insinuating
yeah.
that to veterans, and these.
Well, that was suggested during the Vietnam War, by the way. Nixon said that if we left Vietnam, they would come to the United States.
Right.
And,
I mean, it's all.
And they didn't. They just wanted their own damn country back. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing here. But I find it mind-boggling. I agree with you, Heidi, that they would show pictures of 9/11 in the context of maintaining our occupation of Iraq when Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11 and Saddam Hussein was a mortal enemy to Al Qaeda.
Can I just add one thing to this?
Yes, please.
The biggest tragedy is that the first thing that Mike Barnicle asked Ari Fleischer, the first thing that he asked him was, do you know that soldier's name? And you know what he said? I don't know it. There's four, they found four soldiers to go out and do this, and he didn't even know this soldier's name.
Yeah.
And
the question,
Rykoff, Paul Rykoff said it just perfectly. This is the issue that it's to them, to the administration and their whole deal is that these soldiers don't even have names.
Right.
You know?
And the first question that I would have asked him is, how can you sleep at night conflating 9/11 with Iraq, you know, perpetuating
a lie?
Well,
he went down that road too. And then later on in Hardball, there was an Army general on who was, he was retired major general, and he was incredulous. He couldn't even, his lips were quivering when he was trying to explain his disgust.
Yeah.
You know.
Good point. Heidi, I've got to move along, but thank you for the call, and thank you for making that point. Every time this ad shows, in every state it shows, somebody needs to stand up. One of us needs to stand up and say, wait a minute, why are you showing pictures of the planes hitting the towers at the same time you're talking about Iraq? There's no connection between the two. Dave in Hollywood, California. Hey, Dave.
Oh, hi, Tom. You know, I wanted to comment on Maurice's comment that he was harboring racist feelings. I don't think you can be racist against the oppressor. For example, South Africa went from apartheid to genocide. Now, if I was black and my food and water had been taken away in South Africa, I would indeed hate white people. I'm white myself, and I find myself hating white people. They are the oppressors.
But that's not racism for racism. That's racism against essentially a political machine. The fact of the matter is that when anybody slides into racism, they do so at their own spiritual peril. I mean, that was the message of Dr. Martin Luther King. He was willing to acknowledge that there were white racists that he was struggling against, but he wasn't going to get in the mud with them and become a racist himself.
Yeah,
and
we killed.
Yeah, well, we didn't. Somebody did, but
white killed him, and our forefathers were slave owners.
I understand all that, Dave, and you're not going to shout me down. And it doesn't work to become the force that you're trying to become against. 57 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio. Hartman Program, Viagra for your brain. This is Air America Radio.
Okay, it's after the 7:30 screening tonight. I'll be doing a question and answer at the tomorrow night, at the San Francisco Landmark Embarcadero, the opening night in San Francisco of Leonardo DiCaprio's new movie, The 11th Hour, that I'm one of 50, more or less, experts or, you know, guests, people in the movie. Should be great fun, and I look forward to seeing you there. If you're in the San Francisco area, if you're listening to us on the Quake, check it out. And you'll find a link even to where you can buy tickets over at the Landmark Theaters at tomhartman.com. Click on my schedule page, and you'll find it right there on the schedule page. Should the United States, should American citizens be allowed to import pharmaceuticals from other countries and thus save money? That's the main frame that's out there. Bernie Sanders, in fact, was the first guy to do this in Vermont. He organized bus trips of elderly people. This was almost a decade ago. It was back when I was living in Vermont. And to go up to Canada to buy their drugs. And Yaron Brook is with us. He is the executive director of the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. Ayn Rand, of course, the author of Atlas Shrugged, The Fountainhead, many papers on objectivism, the founder of the objectivist movement or philosophy, objectivism, the in my opinion, the founding thinking worldview that libertarians have borrowed and used many pieces of, although not all, and that modern-day Grover Norquist-type conservatives have borrowed to some extent, although the Ayn Rand folks would say that they are none of the above. They are objectivists. Yaron Brook, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, and I love the Viagra for the brain. Can that be imported from Canada?
There you go. Well, you've got it right now. Here we are. You have this op-ed piece written over at the Ayn Rand Institute. In fact, it's a press release, actually. The prices of many U.S.-made prescription drugs are lower in places such as Canada, Australia, and Europe than in the United States. In order to allow Americans to take advantage of these lower prices, the House recently passed a bill that would permit the reimportation of these cheaper drugs to the United States. And you say that's a bad thing. Why?
Well, because I think it's a form of importing immoral and abusive price controls that have been inflicted on the drug companies by these foreign countries, Canada, Australia, the European Union. And I think those price controls are bad for America. They're bad for Americans. They're bad for our long-term health care. They're bad for the drug companies. And they're wrong to begin with. It's not the role of government to determine prices of drugs.
Now, my understanding was that Canada would say to Merck or Switzerland or Germany or whatever, they would say to them, you know, we're going to buy for our national health care program, we're going to buy a million penicillin pills in the month of January, and, you know, we know what your manufactured cost is. It's a penny a pill, so we won't pay more than 1.3 cents a pill, and take it or leave it. I didn't know that, you know, price controls, I didn't know that these governments were going over to the pharmaceutical companies and putting a gun to the head of the executives.
Well, of course they are, in a sense, because it's not the role of government to buy drugs. It's wrong for governments
Why not?
To buy drugs and basically restrict the ability of the drug companies to sell the drugs in the free market at whatever price they can get for it.
Because the job
of government is to protect individual rights. It's not to abuse the rights of the drug companies and, in fact, abuse the rights of those people who are sick in Canada, who won't get the benefit of R&D from the drug companies unless we, by the way, Americans subsidize R&D. I mean, what's happening? Let's look at the economics of this. What's happening is that Americans are subsidizing the research and development of drugs for the entire Western world where you know, these governments are negotiating these ridiculously low prices. We are paying a higher price because Canadians are paying a lower price. And all that will happen if we start importing drugs from Canada, one of two things will happen. It's simple economics. Either the drug companies will then restrict the amount of drugs that they sell into the Canadian system, and therefore there won't be any to import into the United States, or there will be no profits for the drug companies, therefore no R&D, and therefore no future drugs, and we'll all globally suffer the consequences. What Americans should be advocating for and what the American government should be insisting on is that we stop subsidizing the Canadians. In other words, that Canada drop this arm twisting of the drug companies in order to get these low prices and force us to subsidize the research and development for the entire world.
Okay, first of all, I assume that you realize that most R&D on pharmaceuticals in the United States is funded by taxpayer dollars, not by pharmaceutical companies. It's done by universities and the like.
And that the
pharmaceutical companies in Europe, yeah, who are doing very well, thank you very much, many of them not selling into the United States market, are actually coming up with some of the most successful breakthrough drugs.
Well,
most of the R&D financed in the United States by pharmaceutical companies, this is well documented in the science literature, in fact, the AAAS Science just did an article about it about 6 months ago. Most of the pharmaceutical research in the United States is how do we add one molecule to an existing drug to extend the patent so we can continue to gouge people on the price?
Well, a number of things. First of all, that's blatantly not true. I mean, it's true that a lot of the basic research is funded by government. I'm against that. I wish the government would get out of science. I think it distorts science left and right in every field that the government touches. So I'd like government to get out and therefore stop crowding out private investment into the sciences. I think we'd get more drug breakthroughs if government didn't fund it. But put that aside, the government can only fund the basic research. At some point, it is the pharmaceuticals that take over, and they spend, you know how much it costs to get a drug to market. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars to get through the FDA and to get all of that. Now, I am all for...
But it's still less than they're spending on marketing.
A much leaner FDA policy like the Europeans, where we could get drugs to market faster and therefore reduce the cost of our pharmaceuticals of developing drugs. I'm for doing away with the FDA and creating private entities that screen drugs. I think a lot of lives would be saved if we did that and didn't have to go through.
So a private corporation should be supervising
Absolutely.
The private corporations of the drug companies. You
Absolutely.
Said earlier that you felt that government has no business being a purchaser of pharmaceuticals as Canada is, as Germany is, as the United Kingdom is, because the role of government is to protect individual rights. What is more fundamental, Aaron Brook, than the right to life?
The right to life does not imply the right to health care.
Why not?
Rights do not imply violating one person's rights in order to preserve the rights of another person. Rights are freedoms of action. What the right to life implies is that you have a right to pursue health care, to go out there and trade and do whatever you can to achieve the best life that you can achieve for yourself. It doesn't mean that the government is going to provide you a job. It doesn't mean the government provide you health care or provide you anything. It just says that the government prevents people from using force or trying to kill you or trying to take away your life. You are then free to do whatever you want, in pursuit of your life, including to make mistakes, including to do things that are harmful to you, including to commit suicide. The right to life includes the right to commit suicide. But it's your life.
But the Constitution also...
The government is supposed to leave you alone.
I understand. And let's try not to filibuster each other here. The Constitution also clearly says that Congress can make laws in response to what the people want. And if Congress makes a law that says that, you know, we're going to provide health care to people, that's not a violation of the Constitution. Governments change and evolve. That's the democratic process. What's wrong with that?
We disagree about our interpretation of the Constitution, but I don't want to get into that because I think it's irrelevant. If the Constitution says what you just said, then I think the Constitution is wrong and should be amended. It's happened before that we've amended the Constitution. The goal of government is to stay out of people's lives and create an environment in which we all can pursue our life, liberty, and happiness. And butt out of the rest. So I don't want a majority telling me.
And how do you do that if you're sick and you can't pay for it?
Well,
and you can't pay for the health care.
Then you have to ask other people to help you pay for your health care instead of using the government to pull a gun on those people to subsidize your health care. Either way, your health care is dependent on other people being productive and creating wealth. The question is, do you ask for that help or do you use government to get that help using force?
So you think if somebody gets cancer and they're a middle-class working person and they're presented with a $250,000 bill for the treatment, which is typically what it costs to treat most cancers, that they should, stand out on the street with a tin cup and a sign?
I think that in a free market, A, the cost of health care would be a lot lower, and B, there would be plenty of charities to take care of those people who couldn't afford it, and C, insurance, actually in a free market, more people would be insured with better insurance.
But historically, it's never been the case. I mean, you look at England 200 years ago. That definitely wasn't the case, and they had about as close to a free market as you can get.
200 years ago, there was no wealth, there was no capital, there was no insurance industry. Believe me, you don't have to believe me, but today, if we had more freedom in the United States, less government intervention, more people would be insured, better insured, with more options and more variety and types of insurance.
Well...
And cheaper healthcare.
I guess we'll have to respectfully agree to disagree.
As usual.
Yaron Brook, Ayn Rand, AYNRAND.org, the website, if you want to learn more about objectivism. Yaron, always interesting talking with you. Thank you very much. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
Minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-303-2270, TomHartman.com, AirAmerica.com, our blog. The White House has issued a manual detailing how to deal with protesters. It gets more and more bizarre. This administration that says they're going to run the government, George Bush, when he first came into office, he's going to run the government like a corporation. Well, corporations are not democracies. And that's what they're doing. They're running the government like a corporation. Corporations are kingdoms. And so, of course, they're going to aggregate as much executive power as they can. And it's a terrible thing. And just to recap our conversation with Yaron Brook of the Ayn Rand Institute, I think it's really important to note that there is this worldview, and it's a very substantial one. I mean, there's a lot of people out there who have bought into this, who believe this, who believe it to be right, that the only role of government is to basically have a punitive role, to run the police department. And some objectivists and libertarians even go so far as to say the government should not be in the street sign business, that the streets should be privately owned. Every road should be a toll road. There should be a corporation making money off everything except for the army and the police force. And some of them, I mean, you know, here now increasingly, not so much with police forces in the United States, but certainly with armies, with our army, we're seeing that many of the functions of our army even have been outsourced. And this is supposed to create efficiency. And instead what it does is it creates cronyism, it creates corruption, and it makes things more expensive, because there are some things that government can do more efficiently, more effectively, and less expensively, because it doesn't have to pay hundreds of millions of dollars in salaries to CEOs and top executives. It doesn't have to have the corporate jet and the fancy headquarters. It doesn't have marketing expenses. And perhaps most important, because government is not a for-profit corporation, it doesn't have to pay dividends to its stockholders or worry about its stock price. In fact, by law, the first thing that a corporation must do is not manufacture a product or offer a service, but make money. Everything has to be, everything, every decision has to be vetted on the altar of, will this enhance profits? And if you don't have that, then, you know, you've got a serious, then your corporation's in violation of the law. And there are a lot of things that enhance profits that are not good for the rest of us. In my opinion, for-profit health care, to a large extent, is at least, at the very least, for-profit health insurance, where the goal is not to provide health care. The goal is to diminish the providing of, to provide as little health care as possible so you can maximize profits. I mean, I find it amazing. Every time I go to the doctor, within a few days, we get a letter, basically, from our insurance company that says, we just got a bill from the doctor, and this is to verify it. And by the way, if you don't call us or respond to this letter within 30 days, we're not going to pay the bill. Now, you know that there's a certain amount of what in the marketing business is called breakage there. In other words, there's going to be a certain number of people who aren't going to read the letter, who aren't going to get the letter, they're on vacation, they've been deployed to Iraq, they're whatever, you know, or they think it's junk mail, they don't see it, they don't get it, and so they don't call the health insurance company and say, yes, I actually did get that service from the doctor, and or I did show up at that hospital visit, or I did use that ambulance, or whatever. They're not going to say that, and the health insurance company is going to refuse to pay it. And then you got 15 more phone calls, and the health insurance company's churning this stuff, and they're doing it in many cases with people in third world countries where they're being paid, you know, $5 a day to answer the telephones, and they're using internet phones that cost virtually nothing, and their costs are lower and lower and lower, and their profits are higher and higher and higher, because what are they doing? They're in the business not of providing health care, but of denying health care. And these health insurance companies, in my opinion, are a leech on the body politic of America. And then at the same time, again, with pharmaceuticals, why should we not be allowed to import drugs from countries that bulk buy from the government? You can call it price controls. It's not price controls. Price controls lead to shortages. I am not a proponent of price controls. Every time, you know, anytime any government tries that, it fails. It's silly. I mean, that does defy some fundamental laws of economics to say, you know, you must sell us this. You must sell us aspirin at a penny a tablet. Well, you know, if the manufactured cost is a penny and two mils, it's 1.2 cents, and the government says you must sell it at one penny, you just stop making it. And you have shortages. I mean, it's very simple. Price controls don't work. But governments around the world are not imposing price controls. What they're doing is they're negotiating hard. And that is the marketplace. That is free enterprise saying, okay, that's fine. You know, I realize you're selling these pills for $5 a piece if I buy 10 of them, like if I walk into the drugstore, but I'm a government. I'm going to buy 100 million of them. What's your price on 100 million? Your shipping costs are lower. Your manufacturing costs are lower. Your economies of scale are improved. So therefore, you should be able to give us a lower price. And we're going to negotiate as low a price as we possibly can. And we should be able to do that in the United States. And if it wasn't for Billy Towson, who left his job as the congressman from Alabama, as I recall, maybe it was Mississippi, early, in fact, after negotiating into the Medicare drug bill that it's illegal for the federal government to negotiate with the drug companies, to go take a multi-million-dollar job with pharma, the lobbying firm for the big drug companies. If it wasn't for Billy Towson and his friends in the Republican Party, we'd be able to negotiate for drug prices here in the United States. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
And just to tell you, just to show you how sometimes, you know, things just never change. And it seems that sometimes they never do. And in just a second, I'm going to be going to your phone calls. But first, I just have to share with you. Let's step into the Wayback Machine back to 1985. Frank Zappa, a guest on Crossfire with Bob Novak. This is Frank Zappa predicting today. The late Frank Zappa.
The biggest threat to America today is not communism. It's moving America toward a fascist theocracy. And everything that's happened during the Reagan administration is steering us right down that pipe.
Oh, Mr. Zappa, do you really think? All kidding aside, in this country, with the permissiveness that we are moving toward a fascist theocracy, anything goes.
We are, but
I mean, do you think things like this would ever have been permitted?
Smile again.
When we were kids, you're about my age, maybe
I'm
a little younger. Well, I'm 55. Do you think when I was a kid that they would permit songs like that to be sold? I mean, permissiveness is the game. You're not really serious if you're saying we're going toward a fascist theocracy.
That's right, we are.
Wait a minute.
In what way? Give me
Bob,
one example.
One example of a fascist theocracy.
When you have a government that prefers a certain moral code mm-hmm. derived from a certain religion, and that moral code turns into legislation to suit certain religious point of view, and if that code right. happens to be very, very right-wing, almost toward Attila the Hun.
Well, then you are an anarchist. Every form of civil government is based on some kind of morality, right?
Morality in terms of behavior, not in terms of theology.
Then you are an anarchist, Frank. Don't you get it? Only anarchists are worried about fascist theology, theocracies in the United States. Oh, my. Bob in San Francisco, California, listening on the Quake. Hey, Bob, what's up?
This is Bob Linden. I have a program on the Quake and on Air America called Go Vegan with Bob Linden.
Oh, great.
And I am a huge fan of your show. I just wanted to ask you to rethink your premise a little bit regarding the comparative importance of animal abuse versus domestic violence. And I wanted to suggest that there's actually a connection, that there's irrefutable evidence that holds animal abuse as a predictor of future violence against people.
Absolutely. Yeah. And particularly among children. Children who abuse animals are, you know, like George Bush blowing up frogs for fun when he was a kid. Are people who grow up to, and people who think that killing animals is fun as a sport, frankly, in my opinion, there's a certain sickness associated with that. I can understand killing animals for food if that's, you know, your survival system. There are indigenous and aboriginal people around the world, but they're very respectful about the animals that they kill. And it's a whole different thing from Dick Cheney driving out in a Lexus SUV to where they've stuffed some doves so that somebody can you know, pull a string and open the top of the cage so they'll fly out so that he can swing around with his shotgun and take off at them. I mean, it's just absolutely,
absolutely.
So.
I mean, there's a guy who his whole day is spent in the office trying to figure out how to kill people, and for recreation, he goes and, you know, blows up innocent birds in a canned hunt. It's absolutely outrageous.
I know. It's absolutely.
I think Bush and Cheney basically show signs of mad cow disease in the human population anyway. You know.
So. Yeah. Well, and there's probably a lot of cows mad at them. Bob, thanks a lot for the call. Gail in Salem, Virginia. Hey, Gail, welcome to the program. Listening
thank
to WVAX.
Tom, taking my call. I have two comments to make. One, the gentleman with the Ayn Rand Institute.
Yes.
My granny in the South here, she said back when I was very little that theory is called root little pig or die.
Hmm.
That's for Joe Average. You know, you don't need, if you can't root hard enough, you'll die. Nobody's going to help you.
Survive. And that's really, I mean, Michael Moore said it brilliantly at the end of his movie Sicko. He said, are we going to be a we society or a me society?
Right. That's exactly it. The other thing is about Michael Vick, and of course I live about 25 miles from Virginia Tech. Mm. About Michael Vick, you ask why people feel so much different about the animals than they do women or whatever that have been abused. The problem is that a child, if it had been a child, you'd have had the same outcry. A child or a pet or an animal of any kind has no choice because you're the one in control. An adult, even though I know emotionally they're not in control, but it's presumed that that adult person can run, can fight, can do something. But a child or an animal has no choice.
But a child, I agree with you on children. And I agree that an animal has no choice, but an animal is not a human, and a woman is a human. And so why are we so outraged? Now, you know, I understand being outraged at the abuse of animals. I am outraged at the abuse of animals. But why is that? Why is the abuse of humans, you know, who happen to be women and in many cases girlfriends or spouses, but why is the abuse of humans not as, you know, as outrageous to us as a society?
I think that's why, because of the fact that it's presumed a human has a way to control it somewhat. That's not necessarily true, but I'm saying it's presumed.
Yeah, I know. There's a certain blame the victim mentality in the United States. And yeah, you're okay. Interesting, Gail. Thank you very much for your point. I appreciate it. Steve in Sussex, Wisconsin. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Tom. Very interesting discussion. I wanted to offer my two cents about the yesterday's speech, Bush's speech, and the whole situation in Iraq seems to me, and that Frank Zappa clip that you play, that's brilliant, because there is a bigger picture here. They're trying to sell us kingdom. What Bush is trying to do right now is trying to go back to Vietnam and suggest, well, you know, the reason why we lost in Vietnam is because we are a democracy.
He's trying to reignite the culture wars is what he's doing. I mean, this is a craven political stunt is what it is.
Yes. We have to remember what Lincoln said in 1848 when he tried to censure President Polk on the heels of the illegal war against Mexico, is that kings had always been involving and impoverishing their people, you know, pretending that the good of the people was the object. And he was asking, well, if we don't limit his power, how are we going to stop him next time when he wants to invade Canada to prevent the British from invading us?
Yeah, and this was Lincoln's argument against Polk in the Spanish or the Mexican-American War, which Lincoln was a strong opponent of. Excellent point, Steve. Thank you very much for making it. I appreciate it. Cheryl in Bellevue, Washington. Hey, Cheryl.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I enjoy your program very much. I have two questions. I saw Tim Russert talking about the electoral count by counties or whatever. Is this something that we should really be concerned about?
Yes, there is a Republican lawyer or law firm that has been hired or has taken this on, and they are going to get this on the ballot in California, this ballot initiative, so that California's electoral votes, and I frankly don't remember how many they are, but they're enough that it's one of the biggest states in the union, that California's electoral votes will not all go as a block for the candidate, which traditionally is Democratic. Instead, it will be done on a congressional district by district basis. And what that means is that that the Democrats are going to have to win an additional two or three or four states, depending on the size of the state, than they would normally have to win in order to take the presidency. This is the Republicans' secret weapon for the 2008 election. It's not so secret. I mean, they're out there, you know, they're quite proud of it. They're going to have a multi-million dollar ad campaign behind it, and it's going to sound very seductive. It's going to sound, hey, let's make it more Democratic. Let's let each congressional district decide who they want to vote for president. Wouldn't you like to be able to decide who you want, quack, quack, quack. And the truth is, if every state in the union did this overnight, then actually it would provide a more Democratic process, and the Democrats would be tremendously advantaged. But doing it only in a largely Democratic state, what you're going to do is empower all the Republican districts in that state and who otherwise are disempowered. And by not doing it in Republican states, where you would be empowering the Democrats in those states, what you're creating is you're tilting the playing field strongly in favor of the Republicans. This is a very dangerous, very toxic, attempt by the naked attempt by the Republicans to rig the Electoral College so that there can be a Republican president in 2008.
And I'm like Karl Rove might be working on.
Well, yeah, or, you know, he's not the only smart guy in the Republican Party who doesn't believe in democracy. I mean, you know, this this is something that the voters of California need to know about and need to start working against right away, because this is coming, and it's going to be very, very destructive. Cheryl, thank you for your call and for bringing up the issue. Errol in Greeley, California. Hey, Errol.
Hello. I sent you some documents about a year ago that explained what I'm about to say. I'm a diabetic who can't use genetically engineered insulin. That's the only insulin available in America. Eli Lilly took the animal insulin and replaced it with genetically engineered insulin.
You're right. It's cheaper.
And no, it's what genetically engineered insulin's doing. Killing diabetics like they're walking into a machine gun. I became diabetic because Richard Nixon sprayed me with dioxin. And now the only insulin that I can use is animal insulin. There's only one place left that I can get it. That's CP Pharmaceuticals in Wales, England. And that company's been bought by a company that wants to shut them down. When I can't get my insulin, I die. I've went to, for the last 25 years, I've done everything I could do. I've went to the Congress, the Senate. I've personally talked to Pelosi, to Ted Kennedy, to every... You can't mention an entity. I've been on all of the news programs. I've been on newspapers and on radio. I've done everything I can possibly do to get the word out. There was a man in Tampa, Florida named Glenn Selig who did a...
Errol, we have to take a break, but I get your point, and I'm very sorry to hear about your situation. And, you know, I guess the word is out. That's the best I can do is, you know, let you get the word out, and you did. And you did it very well and very eloquently. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
Before the hour, Tom Hartman with you. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., talkradionews.com on the line. Hey, Ellen.
Well, how are you, Tom? Interesting thing is just when you thought he was gone away, he's pushing metal bats, baseball bats, and the war, and that is our very own Ari Fleischer. He is now a founding board member of a group called Freedom Watch. We looked them up on the internet. They're not even there yet. They somehow got $15 million to put ads out in favor of the war. And his big quote of the day, which you may have been already talking about, is, for those that believe in peace through strength, the Calvary is coming. And this from a Jewish press secretary.
Interesting. What does this being Jewish have to do with it?
Well, I mean, just referring to the Calvary and the, that sort of crusade.
Oh, I think he's talking about the Wild West cavalry.
Oh,
as opposed to the Jesus crucifixion cavalry.
All right. Okay.
That would be my guess. I mean, I haven't seen it.
I think you're probably right, and I got it wrong.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see.
But it's only because, of course, the president made his remarks about the Crusades at one point.
Yeah, Yeah, yeah. It's
during Ari Fleischer's time, I believe. But anyway,
I'm guessing this is Ari's way of cashing in. You know, he's going to make some good money on this, and maybe he's auditioning for Tony Snow's job. You know, there's talk about Tony Snow leaving.
Maybe. Oh, do you think they'd actually bring him back? Oh my gosh!
What a surprise!
I wouldn't know what to say.
What a surprise!
What a surprise! Okay.
Seriously though, who do you think is going to replace Tony Snow when he leaves?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think Dana Perino is certainly a good possibility. You know, Bush will probably take from within, and Gordon Jonro, who is the nicest guy on the planet, but comes from, you know, sort of his Texas roots and very much a Bushy, is another good possibility. They're letting Gordon do more and more things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another possibility. I very much doubt whether the president's going to go outside the White House for the last year and a half. They tend not to, and I just don't think that they will.
Yeah, interesting, interesting.
The Democrats are really banging away at the president for the VFW, Veterans of Foreign War speech, and the Vietnam. And, of course, they're bringing up that Condoleezza Rice statement that she made in 2006 about the historical, they're not really, historical parallels are not helpful, and that's what she said about the Vietnam War back then. But, of course, Now she's Secretary of State and supporting Bush. In any case, the Democrats are banging away on it. Kerry, as you know, is banging away on it, and they're trying to bang away at it because of the Petraeus report that will be coming out.
Right. And in fact, there's apparently going to be a new ad out, a 30-second ad that Vote Vets are putting out in response to this $15 million campaign that Ari Fleischer is launching. I have the ad here if you'd like to hear it. Just a quick clip of it.
Sure.
Okay, here we go.
When I went to Iraq, I put my country first. Now we're stuck in a religious civil war, and the troops say it's only getting worse. Susan Collins thinks protecting George Bush is more important than protecting America. But George Bush is obsessed with Iraq instead of defeating Al-Qaeda. And Susan Collins won't stop him. Senator Collins, when will you put your country before politics?
And the guy speaking is an Iraq war vet, and this is called Senator Collins. And they're going to customize these for the various congressional districts around the country, just like Ari Fleischer is doing with his ads. It's interesting, dueling ads now, and this, you know, from Vote Vets, and people, if they want to participate in this, can go over to Vote Vets. I think it's votevets.org, as I recall. It's easily Googled in any case.
Right, and they're great. They're a great group. The other thing is Senator Edwards this morning was doing a town hall in Hanover, New Hampshire, and he took a swipe at Hillary Clinton. He said the choice for our party cannot be more clear. We cannot replace corporations and those who support corporations, Republicans, and corporate Republicans with a group of corporate Democrats. So he got his swipe in over on that one as well.
Well, I keep saying John Edwards is the guy that corporate America is most afraid of. He's the guy that the Republican Party is most afraid of. He's the guy in this most recent poll. John Edwards beats any Republican by more than 10 points, whereas Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, the only other two Democrats who will beat any Republican, it's down around 3 to 5 points. And therefore, they're going to be going after him seriously. The Republicans are, in my opinion. Remember Howard Dean? You know, Howard Dean, I think, had a very good chance of beating George W. Bush in the last election.
And then they went after that ad, which I think is what really finished him off in Iowa.
That's right. $1 million.
Latte drinking, New York Times reading, etc.
Right, yeah. Here you had, you know, Steve Forbes and a bunch of Republicans spending $1 million in the Iowa caucuses, before the Iowa caucuses and the Iowa primary, in an ad attacking a Democrat. I just think that the Republicans are all about figuring out who they want to run against, and they don't want to run against John Edwards.
That's what really finished him off in Iowa, I'm convinced. Club for Growth ad.
I agree with you. Ellen Ratner, talkradionews.com. Ellen, thanks for dropping by.
Thank you.
Always great talking with you. 57 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Coming up next, Rowan Scarborough.
The Tom Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio. the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio, where smart people get their news.
Third hour of our program, 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. A new book is getting a lot of attention, particularly among conservative commentators, you know, for the Fox News, right-wing talk shows, and the like. Rowan Scarborough, formerly a writer with the Washington Times, has published this book, Sabotage, America's Enemies Within the CIA. In fact, it asks the question up at the top, has the CIA become a rogue agency? And it's really rare that the CIA actually issues a press release on a book, but they have on this book. First of all, Rowan Scarborough, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you here, Rowan. Thank you. Let me just read, it's only three sentences long, or four sentences, the CIA's press release, and get your response to it. CIA Director of Public Affairs Mark Mansfield issued the following statement. He said, "We generally don't comment on books, but we have departed from that on this occasion and have decided to do so in connection with Rowan Scarborough's new book, Sabotage, America's Enemies Within the CIA. CIA employees work very hard to protect their fellow citizens and to help keep America safe. They take great pride and take great risks in serving our country. They know that the intelligence they collect, analyze, and deliver to policymakers, diplomats, law enforcement officers, and military commanders makes a difference each and every day. The premise of Mr. Scarborough's book, that CIA employees are working to undermine our government, is both ridiculous and offensive." Ridiculous and offensive?
Well, I disagree with that characterization. I think my book is based on facts. Everything that I say in the book, I back up with instances of where I believe the CIA has undercut our government or undercut significant players in the national security field. And I might add that a week later, after the CIA said it doesn't comment on books very often, it put out a longer press release criticizing a book that comes at the CIA from the left, The Legacy of Ashes. So they're being criticized from the left and criticized from the right. This week they were criticized internally by their own IG. And I think if you read the Tim Weiner's book and you read my book, I think they're both based on facts coming from a different premise to criticize the CIA.
Yeah, well, the IG's analysis, I guess you could call it, that was released yesterday, 2 years after it was finished, was pretty damning. By the way, your website, you're writing now for the Examiner, examiner.com for that website. Rowan, why would the CIA go after, you know, why would they become essentially, I mean, you're essentially accusing people within the CIA of being traitors. Why?
I believe they've done it for several motives. They've done it because they don't like a counterterrorism program, and if they expose...
Why not?
Because they disagree with it. They politically disagree with it. They politically disagreed with taking Al-Qaeda kingpins to secret locations to interrogate them. Some of the CIA believe they should have been taken to our country and processed as criminals. So they expose...
Well, that's what the law requires.
Well,
you're saying that there are some in the CIA who thought that we should follow the law. Is that the point?
I'm saying that president in war says that you don't pick up a Nazi general off the field in Germany and take him to Old Bailey in London and give him a lawyer and then say, can we talk to him about future German troop movements? That's not how you fight a war. If you capture someone like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, you want to put him in a room and find out everything you can about Al-Qaeda and what their future plans are to attack our country.
Well, and in fact, we picked up a lot of Nazi generals during World War II, and we interrogated them, but they had rights under the rules of war. And when you diminish those rights, you diminish the rights for your own people. Are you suggesting that the CIA should engage in extra legal activity, thus putting you and me at the risk of the KGB coming over here and engaging in extra legal activity?
I'm saying it's fine to treat them as a POW. That's fine. But initially, we knew very little about Al-Qaeda before 9/11, very little, and we knew absolutely nothing about their future plans of attack. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is a guy who could tell us all of that, and he did. He did eventually. But to get that information from him, you cannot treat him as a POW. You just cannot do it. It has to be there.
Why not? It worked quite well in World War II. It worked quite well in World War One.
Yes.
It worked quite well in Korea and in Vietnam. I mean, talk to people who are professionals in interrogation, and they will tell you over and over and over again that torture is the least effective way to quickly get competent information.
No, I'm not endorsing torture. And you say it worked very well in World War II. We had very few POWs in World War II in the Japanese theater. Very little. We can all get
in the Japanese theater, sure, because they committed suicide.
Well, we didn't give them a lot of time to surrender during that island hopping. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that people in the CIA disagreed with that program, so they exposed it to kill it. Okay? People can argue that they did the right thing. What I'm arguing is if you have a CIA that leaks all its programs, nobody's going to cooperate with it. And if you want an agency that can get human, that can recruit people, that can penetrate militants and al-Qaeda cells, if they think the CIA can't keep their name secret, they're not going to join the CIA. And that's what.
But if the CIA is engaging, if you're advocating that the CIA engage in behavior that we would never want inflicted upon us, we would not want Vladimir Putin to decide that Rowan Scarborough might be a risk, and so he's going to come over here and kidnap you off the street of America and take you to Uzbekistan and torture and interrogate you for months and vanish you, frankly. I mean, you know, there's some 35 people apparently have died in these interrogations at the hands of the CIA. I just don't get it. Why there was a reason why George Washington instructed his troops to treat British prisoners of war, to get as much information as they could, but to treat them well and to give them no reason to complain of their treatment. I mean, there's a reason why we sign these international treaties. And for you to suggest that the CIA should go along with Bush and ignoring these treaties seems to me anti-American.
Al-Qaeda is not part of any treaty. It's never signed on to any government to respect any kind of
exactly.
Rule of
they're
law,
not a state POW player. They're status. A criminal organization.
Yeah. That's why I think the CIA did the right thing to get these people isolated and to interrogate them before they...
But I thought you were condemning the CIA.
No. What I'm talking about is I'm talking about leaks that come out of the CIA that undermine the war effort. That was the original question, and that's what I'm talking about. And it's one of many, by the way. And the other point of the book is that there have been smears coming out of the CIA, either to shift blame away from them for making a mistake or just because they didn't like the policies of somebody in government. They've leaked anonymous, inaccurate smears against people in government that ultimately turned out to be untrue, were proven untrue a year later, 18 months later. But by that time, the lie never caught up with the truth, and these people were damaged for the rest of their career. That, to me, is not how a premier intelligence agency is supposed to operate.
And yet the organization that you worked for when you were a Mooney, the Washington Times, people who read the Washington Times, people who watch Fox News, the majority of people who watch Fox News now, over 60%, believe that Saddam Hussein and Iraq were directly involved in 9/11. When there was no connection whatsoever. 34% of people who watch Fox News believe that we found weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. I mean, spreading disinformation is not something limited to the CIA.
Well, I'm not an expert on what Fox News reports day in or day out, and I don't think I've never reported that Saddam Hussein was behind 9/11. I've never reported that. I've never seen any of my colleagues report that. So I think it's sort of nasty.
Well, George Bush reported it yesterday.
Who did?
George Bush, in his speech to the VFW, he said, we've got to continue the fight in Iraq against the people who hit us on 9/11.
Okay, well, that's because al-Qaeda has moved into Iraq, and they have, you know, Zawahiri, in one of his many statements, has said that we cannot lose in Iraq.
Zawahiri had nothing to do with 9/11.
No, you're talking about Zarqawi. Zawahiri, the number two guy in al-Qaeda.
Yeah, he said, not in Iraq. He's in Waziristan.
Well, he's in one of the tribal areas, probably, yes. But he issued a statement at one point last year that we cannot afford to lose in Iraq. And I think for al-Qaeda, Iraq is probably their number one priority right now, and that's why...
Well, you know who's... come on, you and I both know who's going to take out al-Qaeda in Iraq. It's going to be the Iraqis. They're not going to put up with al-Qaeda.
They're not? Well, no.
They're not right now. I mean, in the Sunni areas, they're killing them.
Well, they have turned on Al-Qaeda. They had an alliance for a while, and then they decided, no, this stuff isn't for us. And so they have turned on them, which is good. I mean, they should turn on them.
And it's happening across the Muslim world. I mean, in Indonesia, the last study was that, you know, 3 years ago, 80% of people thought Osama bin Laden was a hero. Now it's less than 20%.
Well, that's
people
good.
Are turning on these guys.
Well,
yeah,
good.
I agree it's good.
Yes, that's a good development. That's what we want to happen. This is why Al Qaeda has put their leaders into Iraq to organize Sunnis and try to bring down the government. And right now they're not winning, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Rowan Scarborough, Sabotage, America's Enemies Within the CIA, Examiner.com, the website. Rowan, thanks for being with us today.
Okay, take care, Tom.
Interesting conversation. 16 minutes past the hour.
Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio.
Minutes past the hour. Rich in Stratford, Connecticut on the line. Hey, Rich, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Your guest's point is exactly the opposite of the one that George Bush has been making for the last 4 years in the war in Iraq. George Bush keeps saying that he listens to the generals on the ground. But if the people in the CIA are against the policies put forward by the White House, shouldn't we be listening to them?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that was the point that I was making, is if the CIA thinks that the Bush administration is telling them to break the law, and they leak that in order to stop the Bush administration from doing it, because it's essentially the only way they can do it, then I consider them heroes. I mean, you know, just very simply, I you know, it's, yeah, good point. Thanks a lot. Mike in Memphis, Tennessee. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Okay. Hey, first of all, I just wanted to thank you for exposing so much truth and helping everybody that listens to Air America understand so much of what's going on. But here's the point. The gentleman you just had, Rowan.
Yeah.
I would love
Rowan Scarborough.
Yes, sir. Rowan Scarborough. I would love to know what his comment might be on the Valerie Plame leak and all that mess, because it seems like if he's concerned about leaks that and concerned about the integrity of the CIA and protecting the agents, it seems like he should be on our side on that issue.
He actually writes about that and basically blames Joe Wilson for it, and the CIA, saying that the CIA should have known that this would come out and this was going to expose it, and there's a large chunk of the book that basically blames Bill Clinton for it too, predictably. But that's the bottom line, Mike, and I mean, you can check out the book and check out his website for more information. He's not here, so I can't speak for him, but Ayla in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Ayla, welcome to the program.
Hi. It's probably not relevant anymore because it was a while ago, about the dogfighting in Michael Vick. You had a guy named Maurice on?
Yeah, Maurice was one of our callers. What I did is just this story about that's over on Alternet about how this incredibly disproportionately high percentage of professional athletes are engaged in spousal abuse and the abuse of women who are not spouses.
Yeah.
And that does not get them penalized, but when they abuse an animal, boom, you know, they're out on their butts.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about that when you guys were talking about that, and I think the reason the animal thing is such a big deal, and it's not that spousal abuse is not, but it was the cruelty that he showed towards these animals, such as shooting, drowning, electrocuting them. And
I agree.
I agree.
But let's
though,
use
is that women. I mean, I was in an abusive relationship. Women can come back and take care of themselves. Dogs can't. I can take a bat or a gun if I'm getting beat up or hit by my boyfriend or husband. These dogs can't do anything. And so it's kind of a if those people can speak up for themselves, you have organizations that can speak up for women. I'm not necessarily one better than the other, but the fact is that nobody can speak up. The dogs can't speak up for themselves.
But the fact of the matter is, Isla, that many women in the United States are killed for trying to fight back against their husbands.
You know, I'm very well
Murder of spouses and murder by men of women is one of the leading murders that happens in the United States.
You got Lucy Peterson. You know, I just think as regards to the dogs is that this is a big sports guy and he, you know, and I don't think that, I think if it did come out that so-and-so is hitting his wife and whatnot, that they should be suspended. I'm not sure why that's not in their code of conduct. That's very
Yeah, but that's my point.
It's not in their code of conduct either. It's not in their
Right, and so let's use this as a teaching moment for both. I just think that cruelty is cruelty right across the board, and at a certain level we celebrate cruelty among our athletes, and I just think it's an unhealthy thing. Isla, thank you very much for the call. Well made. Martha in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Martha.
Hello, Tom. Boy, I sure love listening to you every day. I wanted to
thank
go
you.
Back to R.E. Fleischer's Freedom ads, whatever.
Yeah. So-called,
I love the names they give places. It reminded me of when Bush visited Grand Rapids and we were protesting before the election. We had free speech zones that we couldn't.
Right, right. Martha, we only have a few seconds before we have to take a break at the bottom of the hour.
I think this R.E. Fleischer campaign is in retaliation for the Iraq summer program that are putting up signs in 50 congressional districts. I know because Grand Rapids is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a 2-month program. There's red and white signs everywhere that say support the troops and the war. And
right.
I think they're targeting with ads the same districts because
That's
there's
been
a lot of pressure on these congressmen.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense,
Martha. To change their votes.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Martha, thank you very much for the call and for the heads up on that. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Coming up next, the best of the rest of the news with John McCarter from Daily Kos and Christy Smith from FireDogLake.com. And then we'll be back to your calls to wrap up the show. Stick around.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
It's our best of the rest of the news segment. Every Thursday afternoon, get on a couple folks from the internets, the tubes, not the trucks, you know, and talking about what's going on out there, what people are talking about, what are the news stories that we might be missing, what are people discussing. David Waldman is with us. He blogs as, is it KGrowX,
yes,
David?
Right.
KGrowX over at the Daily Kos and dailykos.com, of course, the website. And Christy Smith is with us with FireDogLake.com. Hey, Christy.
Hi, how are you, Tom?
Just fine. Very glad to have both of you with us. Let me start with you, David. I'm curious over at the Kos what you're seeing as, or, you know, in general, but in particular at the Daily Kos, because you're a contributing editor there, what you see as the biggest stories of this week.
Oh, well, what's developing, I think, in this week is looking ahead to the return of Congress from their recess in September, and we're beginning to get a sense of exactly what's going to be on our plate in September, and there's a tremendous amount of work and some tremendous hurdles facing us for trying to end the war in Iraq, to even to continue the functioning of the government. It looks like the president now has veto threats against almost every single appropriations bill that's passed either house. So we're going to have a mess on our hands with that before the fiscal year starts in October. Plus, we, of course, have to try and take up FISA and fix that. And we are getting the non-Petraeus report all at once.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion that Bush is going to try to veto all these appropriations and actually try to shut down Congress so that he can blame it on the Democrats.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what he's doing. And I think Karl Rove was pretty clear about that as his parting shot. So if there's anything we can do in the next coming weeks, it ought to be trying to prepare people for that eventuality and letting them know what they're up to so that when they try and pull that stunt, it just doesn't fly.
And are you seeing this new ad campaign by Ari Fleischer as part of the let's pressure them during the break so that they'll behave the way we want when they come back into session campaign?
I imagine that's what Ari Fleischer thought he was doing. What he's actually doing is pressuring his own troops. He's tearing the Republicans apart. I don't know that they'll budge on Iraq. I don't know that they ever would have budged on Iraq with or without the $15 million they're flushing down the toilet. But what they're actually doing is making it more difficult for Republicans to run to the spot where they ought to be on Iraq, and they have to tie themselves to the Bush administration and throw themselves off the bridge.
You think this is actually going to work against the Republican Party?
Well, it's certainly a waste of $15 million, whether it works or doesn't. But, yeah, I think it makes it more difficult for Republicans to preserve themselves in office. They all know they need to be running away from this.
That's very interesting. Christy Smith, a blogger at FiredogLake.com and a former prosecutor. Christy, what are you seeing over at FiredogLake.com as the biggest stories?
Well, you know, the new NIE, the National Intelligence Estimate information, just hit the wires in the last couple of hours. I've been reading through the text that was released, and I have to say, if this is the good information that they're releasing to the public, the report that the White House is putting together for General Petraeus to sign off on is going to be one heck of a report in September. It is just a political disaster for the White House looking through this NIE.
How so?
Because, you know, what we're looking at is the Iraqi government is increasingly unstable. The Bush administration had been banking on Maliki and some of the other Shiites in the government being willing to at least compromise somewhat with the Sunnis. Instead, what we've had is they've taken the entire month of August off, and they refuse to, you know, come to any political terms before they did so, which means when they come back in September, right before the report is going to be due to Congress, they're going to have more political infighting, which is going to lead to more instability at a time that the Bush administration is not going to want that to be happening, because Congress is going to be making decisions on Iraq as well.
Do you think they're going to figure out a way to spin it or cosmetically alter it?
I don't know how you can spin that sort of results on the ground. I mean, you look at the news coming out of Iraq every day. The sectarian violence has gotten worse. In Baghdad alone, they're finding anywhere between 15 to 20 corpses every morning in the streets. There are more bombs that have been going off. This has been the bloodiest summer of all of the time that we have been in Iraq, and we've been there now longer than the U.S. Civil War lasted. I don't know how you can spin that as a success when the only way we can start to even think about having any stability there is for there to be some political compromise. And at the moment, they don't have any incentive to make any political compromise.
Yeah. In fact, you could argue the reverse is the situation. Christy Harden-Smith over at FiredogLake.com. I want to come back to you in just a minute and ask about your thoughts on what's on the horizon that we're perhaps not noticing. But I'd like to first ask David Waldman, blogging as KGRO X over at the and a contributing editor over at the Daily Kos. David, the same question to you. What do you see as the stories that right now are just kind of bubbling around and maybe nobody's paying much attention to them that are going to blow up in our faces over the course of the next few weeks or months?
Well, one of the other things that we'll have to deal with when the Congress comes back in September is how to deal with the subpoenas to the administration that have been ignored. Senator Leahy was just down in Washington to have a press conference to announce that he was going to confer with his colleagues to figure out what to do next. But this is something we've seen coming for forever. It's been clear that the administration was never going to respond to these subpoenas, and that's going to have to be top priority on their way back. It's shoehorned in among all the other things in September. The Congress has to stand up and say whether there's subpoena power or not.
Right. And if this goes to, as it probably will, if it gets referred to the Justice Department to get referred to the U.S. Attorney in Washington, D.C., and Gonzo says, no, ain't going to do it, do you think that there's any possibility that Congress would use the only power, I believe, the only power they have left of them to them, which is the power of inherent contempt?
Well, that's one of two powers that they would have left to them, the other being impeachment. Certainly their preference would be for something less than impeachment, but the truth is their preference is for something less than inherent contempt, though nothing exists. But that's all they've got. The administration has as much as announced that it will not prosecute statutory contempt. And yet they're going to come back and confer with their colleagues about whether or not they're going to just try it anyway. So, they're going to have to make up their minds about whether or not they've got it in them to deliver on the subpoena power, which, you know, even Nancy Pelosi, when rejecting the notion of impeachment, told everybody that the single most important thing about winning back Congress was winning back the subpoena power. Well, here it is.
Right. Yeah. So do something with it, please.
Yeah.
Christy Harden Smith, you're a former prosecutor, blogging over at FiredogLake.com, and an attorney. I'm curious about your take on that, and also what you see as, you know, coming down the road that perhaps we're not noticing right now that may be the big stories of the fall as it approaches.
Well, you know, I agree with David on the need for enforcement on the subpoena power. Either Congress stands up on this and enforces what ought to be a separation of powers issue, or they might as well just pack up their bags and go home. I mean, you know, this is one of those issues where they have to stand. It's not, you know, a partisan issue. It ought to be a bipartisan question. It's one that I think some of the Republicans, at least on the House Judiciary Committee, have started to take a look at a little more closely, because, you know, in the next election cycle, I think the odds are very good that we'll be looking at a Democratic president. And if you undercut the ability to, issue a valid subpoena in terms of doing oversight, which I'm sure all the Republicans in Congress would like to be able to do with a Democratic president, just like they did during the Clinton years, you know, if they give that away now, they lose that completely. So this has to be enforced. They have to stand up. They have to do something about it. So I completely agree with David on that.
There's a certain irony there in the idea that the Democratic Congress, after 5 years of Bush using all these powers in ways that were obviously never, not only not imagined by the founders, but rejected by the founders, that after he's used the powers and he's pretty much done with them, that they're going to take them away so that the next president who might be a Democrat won't have them. I mean, it's kind of ironic.
It really is. I mean, when you look at just the founding arguments for the United States government that you see, you know, in the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers, when you read through all of that, this was one of those issues that they were very afraid of and very conscious of when they drafted the documents. We have to stand up on that issue.
Yeah, Madison wrote extensively about it, particularly about the danger of protracted warfare. You were going to point out another story that you see on the horizon.
Yeah, I think one of the stories that just came up in the last few days, Mike McConnell, who's the Director of National Intelligence, gave an interview, and it was a very odd one, to Chris Roberts at the El Paso Times about the FISA program and about some of the other surveillance programs that we have going. And he got into some extensive detail with the reporter and then said, well, you know, talking about this with Congress and allowing Congress oversight on these matters, you know, really means that people, you know, who are involved in surveillance and other issues for us could be killed. Well, why was he talking to this reporter about the El Paso Times for it? If this is such a top secret thing that even Congress is supposed to be blocked from doing lawful oversight over Bush administration activity, why was the Director of Intelligence shooting his mouth off to a reporter who then printed the story, because it's a story that the National Intelligence, you know, czar is talking about something that he's saying should be highly classified and very protected.
And perhaps more importantly, why aren't the news reporters, the transcriptionists these days for CBS, ABC, NBC, CNN, etc., why aren't they asking the question that you just asked? I mean,
right. And you know, McConnell implicated AT&T, Verizon, and other telecommunication companies directly in his remarks. Why aren't they asking about that, too?
It's a big deal. Christy Harden Smith, FiredogLake.com, David Walden, The Daily Kos. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
45 minutes past the hour.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Well, you can't turn him into a company man. You can't turn him into a whore. And the boys upstairs just don't understand anymore. Well, the top brass don't like him talking so much, and he won't play what they say to play. And he don't wanna change what don't need to change. And there goes the last DJ who plays what he wants to play.
definitely saying what he wants to say. Welcome back. By the way, just a quick reminder, tomorrow I will be doing this program live from the Quake, KUKE, rather than our home station here, KPOJ, in Portland. I'll be in San Francisco because tomorrow night for the 7:30 showing, I will be doing a question and answer after the 7:30 showing of Leonardo DiCaprio's new movie, which is opening in San Francisco tomorrow night. The 11th Hour is the name of the movie, and it's opening at the San Francisco Landmark Embarcadero Downtown Theater. So check it out, and if you show up for the 7:30 movie, I will be there afterwards to have a short. It'll be a short Q&A because, you know, the next movie is coming up, but I hope to see you there then. Looking forward to it. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Jean in Yountville, California?
Yeah, this is Jean in Yountville, and I'm listening to you on Quake.
Great.
And I'm calling about the earlier conversation about changing the Electoral College method in California.
Yes.
From choosing from the state to the congressional districts.
Right.
There is another proposal put forth by Common Cause, and it's called the Agreement Among the States to Elect the President by National Popular Vote.
Right.
This is an interstate agreement whereby the states would... state legislatures would pledge their electoral votes from their states to the presidential candidate who wins the national popular vote.
Right.
And when the states whose electoral votes total 270 have all passed this bill into law, then the Electoral College will be history.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And I'm not, you know, I'm somewhat ambivalent about that because...
Really?
Yeah, because if we just did a national popular vote, there are, I believe, 14 states. I'd have to go back and find the paper on it. But I believe that there are 14 states that the presidential candidates could campaign in and that have, you know, that are the most populous states and basically ignore the rest of the United States.
Right.
And the Electoral College, by weighting smaller states or less populous states a little more and weighting more populous states a little less, forces there to be more of a national campaign for president. And I think that that's a healthy outcome. I'm not sure it's what the founders intended, or the framers of the Constitution, but I think it's a healthy outcome. I'm not, frankly, an opponent of the Electoral College. I am concerned that this move in California, I think actually it's a good idea if every state did it.
Yeah.
The congressional districts vote for their own electors. If you're only going to do it in Democratic leaning states, it is, as I said, part of a Republican strategy to basically steal the next election. And that's what I'm very concerned about. Gene, thank you for the call. Dave in Erie, Pennsylvania. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, I just wanted to comment on Bush's speech comparing Vietnam and Iraq.
Yeah.
And Vietnam was us trying to keep a common people apart by force. And Iraq is us trying to keep three separate groups together by force. And
oh, that's
it's a
very
losing
interesting
proposition.
Point. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well said, Dave. And in fact, you have to ask the question, what if we had won in Vietnam? What if we had actually succeeded in imposing I think we were on our fifth puppet government at that point, and that's not counting the French puppet governments in the South. And keep in mind, you know, Ho Chi Minh early on was not declaring that he was a communist and was perfectly willing to ally himself with us. We basically said no and did the same with Castro. What if we had succeeded in creating a totalitarian, you know, puppet state in South Vietnam or in all of Vietnam? Would we have had another Shah of Iran situation? I think so. The outcome, the long-term outcome, particularly in terms of destabilizing Southeast Asia, may have been far worse if we, quote, won, end quote, in Vietnam. And I reject the analogies about leaving and bloodbath and all this. I mean, we killed 2 million Vietnamese at a minimum. U.S. government statistics, probably more like 3 million Vietnamese during that war, not to mention 57,000 American soldiers. And people say, oh, you know, you pulled out, there was a bloodbath. No, we pulled out, there was some revenge killing going on, and they had re-education camps, and there were boat people. But all of that did not add up to the kind of killing that was going on while the war was going on. We ended that war. We pulled out, and the killing diminished and then eventually went away. And now Vietnam's a trading partner of ours. Kevin in Washington, D.C. Hey, Kevin, what's on your mind today?
Hey there. People have to understand is that the CIA is the armed wing of United States corporate interests. Okay? If you haven't noticed, now the military is playing a less significant role. You know, the Pentagon is playing a less significant role as far as intelligence.
Respectfully, gathering. Kevin, you think we're in Iraq to protect asparagus? I mean, you know, we're looking out for the interests of ExxonMobil in the Middle East, big time.
Exactly.
And that's the military, not just the CIA.
The
instruments of government have always been instruments of corporate power, more or less. I mean, Smedley Butler, in his book War is a Racket, wrote the definitive book on it, and a brilliant one, and raised this issue. And, you know, I'm not going to totally disagree with you. And at the same time, any nation, every nation, needs to have a competent intelligence service. I mean, it's just, it needs to be there. And it just astounds me. The conservatives are now attacking the CIA. It just astounds me. Coming up tomorrow, Senator Bernie Sanders here, Brunch with Bernie, taking your calls, as he does every Friday and has for over 4 years now. Paul Stamets is here to say why saving old growth forests is a national defense issue. He's also going to be in the 11th Hour movie, and he'll be on with us. The best of the rest of the news and your calls. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow from San Francisco.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.